Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Kiwis and Aussies have a long shared tradition. We're both very good at rugby. We've fought world wars side by side. We both invented the Pavlova. And according to linguist Kate Burridge, we're both world leaders when it comes to swearing. Ms. Burridge has been a guest at Victoria University for the past few weeks, where I caught up with her to discuss our cussing.
You got your PhD in, was it medieval Dutch?
It was medieval Dutch syntax, looking at the word order of 8,000, something like 8,000 medieval Dutch clauses.
And how did you get on to Antipodean swearing, which seems to be your topic du jour?
Well, it is connected, oddly, because I looked at medieval medical texts and I got increasingly interested in how people wrote about the things they obviously had difficulty with. So taboo, you know, death, disease, body part, and bodily effluvia. And it's a natural progression from there into swearing because, of course, these provide the ready-made swear words of any culture, whatever is taboo.
That's very interesting. And you've discovered interesting things, though, particularly about Australia and New Zealand and the way and the manner and the rate with which we swear. Is that correct?
Well, certainly with my colleague Keith Allen, I should emphasise this. This is joint work. He's the swearer of the two of us. Certainly, it's an important part of Antipodean English, I think. It always has been. Colloquial idiom dates right back to the English settlements in both places. You know, we've always had this attachment to the vernacular right from the beginning. It sort of defines who we are. It's part of this, you know, these cherished ideals of laid backness and friendliness and all this. Because the, you know, standard language is more global, so to show who we are, then we much of the colloquial idiom, our nicknames and our insults and our swearing patterns. But it's very hard to follow up what you asked to, because basically there have been so few studies done on swearing in the other Englishes around the world that it's hard to know for sure just how uniquely, how unique are these swearing patterns that we find here.
Because of course we didn't invent the swearing. We may have perfected it, but we didn't invent it. How far back does swear words go? I mean, I presume they predate written language, don't they?
As far back as we can go, there has been swearing. But what you find is that there are differences with the idiom that's used. So, in English, we find this great transition from religious-based swearing, blasphemous, profane language in the original sense, and then through to sexually, physically-based swearing, so secular patterns. And then more recently, of course, the great taboos, what you think of as IST language, so racist, sexist, ageist, religionist language. And, you know, the use of, say, ethnic or racial slurs is so provocative as to have legal consequences here in New Zealand as well as in Australia.
Do you think swearing is more common in New Zealand and Australia than other English? I mean, from what studies there have been and what you have seen, it is more common here.
It does seem to be out there in the open a lot more. I'm thinking of, say, the reaction to, I don't know whether you remember that advertisement in Australia, which was a tourism advertisement where, you know, Australians were pitted against these backdrops of, you know, extraordinary scenes. And then there was this fairly awkwardish invitation underneath, "Where the bloody hell are you?" But they, ordinary Australians, and then there's this, "Where the bloody hell are you?" And of course, you know, managed to get censored in North America and banned, totally banned on British television, which does seem an extraordinary thing, doesn't it, really, when you think, you know, this is the nation that brought us out of them and Little Britain and the desire to label FCUK. So, and that doesn't actually even fit in with their own research done on people's sensitivity to swearing, because the BBC, together with the Advertising Standards Commission, I think it was, did this study where 1,500 people had to rank the severity of something like 28 swear words, and only 3% found bloody offensive. So it was odd. It must have been that it was sort of just out there, you know, very obvious in the public arena, you know, written down. It's a bit like our drink driving, you know, drink drive bloody idiot. I know a number of my British friends find this a bit odd to see it on billboards and, government documents and things like that. That's where we differ, I think.
See, one of our old watershed moments in New Zealand was a few years ago. It was an ad for a car, I think I recall, right? The bugger dog. The dog says bugger.
That was a lovely advertisement. I remember that caused a lot of controversy, didn't it?
Yeah.
That was the Toyota Hilux ad, I think, and it was a favourite in Australia as well. Yes, it was. And I've seen bugger on billboards here too. And also, I think it was an advertisement for the opera Macbeth, and it said, some critic had said, "Bloody good opera," green. So I think that's where, you know, it's particularly bloody, isn't it? It's very much a part of New Zealand and Australian speech.
Do you think it's got something to do with our past? And Australia, as we know, is inhabited by convicts, and obviously some of them managed to come out of New Zealand as well. Is that it, that we didn't have this class system, particularly the upper class?
Well, I think when you look at what went into the melting pot, say, in Australian English, it was the kind of convicts. It was the same of seamen and gold diggers and sailors, and of course the vernacular, the vulgar, so-called vulgar language of the London and the Midlands. So this was this kind of melting pot. And then it was quite clear from early accounts in Australia and New Zealand that the flash language, as it was known, or cant, or, you know, just the vernacular, was an important way of fitting in, not to stand out as a new chum or a stranger, but you picked up the lingo quickly. There was a certain amount of pressure on people to do that.
Have we invented any swear words, or are they the ones that are truly unique here in Timothy, and as opposed to just things that we do say more than, you know, than our English counterparts?
Anything, there's some unique combinations, I suppose, of swear words. I mean, all languages have the same, but.
Such as. We can censor them if need be.
Well, I think our use of bloody is when we looked at, actually, interestingly, looking at the corpus we looked at of both spoken and written language, I think it was Australians use bloody 20 times per 10,000 sentences, New Zealand is 7 times per 10,000 sentences, so there was quite a difference there, which was interesting. So if it is called the great Australian adjective, it's not obviously particularly Australian, nor is it an adjective, I should add, which is important. But there was that difference.
What about the F word? I mean, that's one that I think in lots of ways has replaced bloody, particularly in New Zealand, and amongst mates more than onto the other radio. Any signs that we do have a lot more than other people overseas?
Well, I think of Gordon Ramsay, and I think, you know, his lashings of expletives was the earmark of his cooking show, so much that I think one of them was called the F word. What's actually interesting, because of course there are all sorts of reasons why we swear. One is to let off steam clearly, but plenty of studies have shown that when things get really, really tense, people actually stop swearing. So I often wonder, when I think of Gordon Ramsay's kitchen, whether, you know, we've really seen the worst in his kitchen, when things get really, really stressful, perhaps the swearing stops.
It's a really scary thought, isn't it?
But he uses that word so frequently, you could hardly be convinced that it's auto-cathartic or an emotional release for him, because it's, you know, every second word. So I suspect that when things do get very, very tense, then probably some other word is used, or there may well be silence.
Why do comedians swear so much? Is that because it's the taboo and we find this embarrassing relief?
The titillating thrill of scandalized perturbation, as one early researcher described it.
It's fantastic. That's going to be the name of my next band, I think.
That's as a way with what is this fellow.
And just finally, a world without swearing, something that we should aim for, or to you a terrible, terrible idea?
I don't think we could live without it, frankly, because there is that, you know, you cut off in traffic where you hit your thumb with a hammer, these words will bubble up. And, you know, there are some people lose all language ability except the ability to produce these words. I mean, there are certain language disorders where people can swear like a trooper, but they can't repeat the performance. They've gone upon because they've lost the ability to produce ordinary language. So it does suggest that these words are not stored differently in the brain, certainly accessed differently, and they will bubble up. You know, whether they're in heavy disguise, like, oh my gosh, goodness gracious, or whether the full-blown obscenities. But there is a certain psychological gain in letting off steam. There's the social aspect. I suppose the one aspect of swearing that I would like to get rid of is, of course, the abusive words intended to wound or hurt someone. But having said that, of course, there's friendly banter as well, where, you know, the more you like someone, and certainly New Zealanders mentioned this, and Australians too, that the more you like someone, the more abusive you can be towards them. So that's why it's very hard to legislate against these words, because it all depends on context, doesn't it? You know, bastard was once described as, you know, a nice person. So it does depend very much on who's chatting and the situation.
Thank you very much for your time. Bloody good to meet you.
Bloody good to meet you too.
That's Kate Burridge. After the break, Arthur Meek looks into Auckland's lesbian heritage. Yes, the city has some. And Stella join us to say goodbye.